Hey, everybody, it's Chris Aiken from the Classic Metal Show and the Aftershocks podcast. And I know you want to see this next episode, but right before we do it, just want to remind you that if you have an Amazon device, whether it's a TV or a Fire Stick or Fire Cube or whatever it would be, a Firebox, if you're old school, make sure you add the CMSPN to it. Just look up CMS Podcast Network on your Amazon device. Add the channel, and you will get every episode of all four shows for free right there on your TV. Make us part of your TV viewing every single day and night, all right? It's the CMS Podcast Network, CMSPN.com, and it is now on Amazon. So get it, all right? All right, here's the episode you came to see.
All right, let's do this. All right, well, here we go. Welcome to another episode of Aftershocks at AftershocksTV.com on the CMS Podcast Network. And join us today, we've got two longtime veterans in the hard rock and metal world, and they're here to talk about the collaboration you did for the song Heaven's Fury. And in fact, we're going to be premiering the video for it following the conclusion of this episode. We've got guitar extraordinaire Mr. John Hahn, and of course, from the legendary upstate New York metal maestros, the Rods, we got drummer Carl Kennedy joining us today. John, Carl, thank you guys both for joining us. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Doing great. Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for coming on, man. As I just was mentioning, I mean, you guys... Sorry, go ahead, Carl.
Sorry. This is our first joint interview, so kind of cool.
Oh, really? Oh, very cool. Okay. Well, even more special than very nice, man. Well, yeah, like we were just talking about, you guys are getting ready to unveil the new video for the track Heaven's Fury. It's off of John's new release titled Undiscovered World. You know, most of our listeners, obviously, you know, they know, obviously, no doubt, already familiar with who Carl is, but they might not be too familiar yet with John. So just to start things off, John, why don't you just go ahead and give sort of a little, like the listeners, a brief synopsis of your career in music. I mean, I know you got your you know, break, if you want to call it that, when you were featured in Mike Varney's column in Guitar Player magazine some years ago. So just talk a bit about, you know, brief history about of your career so far up until now.
Sure. Guitarist, songwriter. I pretty much cut my teeth in the early 80s as a youngster, as a teenager, when I tried out for an established band that was touring the club scene in the East Coast of the States and Canada, playing four to five nights a week. So I got lots of experience, and to be honest with you, that was, I would say, some of the best times as far as, the music scene, which is crazy, but, I just had some incredible experiences with that band through the years. And then towards the end of the 80s, I decided to start writing some instrumental music and see if I could get any interest. So basically, that's when I sent out a demo to Mike Varney, and like you said, he spotlighted me in Guitar Player, and that kind of inspired me to get more into pursuing that. So basically, in the early 90s, I decided to get off the road for a while and just focus on writing and playing, and seeing where I could go with the instrumental guitar music. So that's when I also sent some material out to David Chastain of Leviathan Records. And then he ultimately signed me, where I released my debut and a couple of Guitar Masters CDs. And then I also did a vocal project CD with a band called Thick as Thieves, which was released in Japan only. And then subsequently a couple more CDs, which kind of brings us to today, with my new release.
Very cool. All right. Awesome, man. Well, yeah, I mean, Heaven's Fury, obviously, is certainly not your guys' first rodeo together in terms of making music, as you both go back to, is, you know, pretty long time ago, when I know, Carl, you, were drumming for John's first release, Out of the Shadows. So talk a bit, I guess, Carl, we'll go with you here. We'll talk a bit about the collaboration between the two of you over the years. I mean, and what is it that really makes you guys click so well together when creating music?
Well, I had a recording studio here in PA, and John came in to record, and his band Harpo had come in to record. So I had met John then, and his stuff blew me away. And I have to say that I was and am a fan. I think John's phenomenal. So when he asked me to play on his first album, I was thrilled. You know, I couldn't have been happier to play. And as I still bust him about it, because I tell him, you know, you program drums better than I play them. I mean, John is unbelievable. When he sends out a demo, it's like this, I just steal as much as I can from what he programs, because he truly, and that was then, he was doing it back then. I mean, he's just gotten better and better. And then when it, you know, when it came time for me to do my first solo album, which, you know, it was a something that really was not planned. John was the first guy I asked. I mean, it was like, it was a no brainer. And, you know, and then, of course, asking me was really an honor again to perform on this album. But I don't know what the, to me, this has been an amazing journey musically. We meshed pretty well. And, but it's been laid out plan, no type of preordained or pre-planned anything. It's just one of those things where we just clicked. And someone pointed out to me musically that, wow, you guys really complement each other. And I never thought of it that way. I just thought that I liked his music. I had a lot of respect for his playing and for his songwriting. I think the songwriting on this album has just been kicked up a huge notch. And so his creativity, his performance level, and just his songwriting ability. And so, you know, I'm just glad that here we are. But it's been interesting that we have this history, because it was never planned.
Sure.
Yeah. Now, we always seem to just cross paths here and there.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Definitely. Now, you know, talking about this kind of music, John, you know, and listening to the album, it's very much like Carl said, the songwriting is really, really strong, and it's so diverse. And I think that is probably the biggest strength to it, is that it really is diverse. And we can look at a song, we'll start with Heaven's Fury, obviously. That's not just in my ear, and tell me if I'm wrong, it's definitely not something that came out of a riff and you just built. It's definitely a composition, or it feels like a composition that, you know, probably took some time to put together, and, you know, probably a lot of orchestration to figure out the parts. Talk a little bit about how that piece of music, you know, in particular came together.
Yeah, actually, to be honest with you, all of the songs, they start with something, a seed. And in this case, it was actually that the intro riff, that main riff of the song. And typically, I don't sit down with a guitar and just start playing and something will come out and catch my ear. I like to hear and build the parts in the song in my head. So over the course of a day, I'll start hearing a song and build on it. And then I'll come down here to my bunker and start recording, and then just start building off of it. But basically, majority of the song just comes from what I hear in my head and then transposing that to guitar and then building from there.
Sure. Now, this comes from a person that is not a guitar player, so I'll just tell you that up front. I am a very failed drummer, so I can relate. I can't relate to either of you too well, but less to the guitar playing. For this,
no, I'm also
a
failed drummer myself. So
stop it.
Self-deprecating.
The guy with the 40-year career is a failed guitar drummer. Sure you are. but John, in all seriousness, where do you draw, or how do you draw the line in this kind of music between playing to what you're trying to create versus overplaying? And I'll be real specific. You know, we were talking about Symphony X. I think Michael Romeo is brilliant at playing to the song. You know, I mean, he's a brilliant player, but he plays to the song.
Yes.
Conversely, I've always thought John Petrucci, who I also think is brilliant, overplays way too much, you know, to where the songs end up being 16 minutes long instead of six. You know, how do you find that balance between overplaying and fitting what without, you know, noodling, I guess?
Good question. Good question. I mean, my focus going into a song is to try not to noodle. No, actually, I mean, I try and create music that I like to hear, and it generally isn't noodly. I like to start with a good bass, a good song. And then another thing that's very important to me is the melody, the hooks. I mean, what to me, whether it's a song with a vocalist or it's melody of an instrument, the melody is the most important part of the song. So I try and focus, you know, on the melodies and trying to keep things. I guess I draw lots of influence from, you know, the early days, the players like Neil Shawns and the, you know, Michael Shankers, the melodic guys. And I try and mix in, you know, the shred stuff somewhat in with the melodic stuff. But I'm really focusing at not only the shredder audience, but I'd like to throw a wider net and try and capture, you know, the casual listener as well. I want it to be something that anybody can listen to and relate to and hear that melody after the song's over in their head. So it's basically I'm focusing on songs and melodies.
Cool. Excellent, man. Well, yeah, and John, I mean, you know, you were talking before about, you know, how you started out playing in a traditional band. You played in the band Harpo, as Carl mentioned. You know, and that was your initial, you know, launch into your musical career. But you, like you mentioned, you wound up then, you know, you got that deal from Leviathan. You decided to go ahead and do the instrumental, take that route. Which I know at that time too, you know, it was pretty popular. You know, you had the Satrianis, Eric Johnsons of the world. Was that something that you always sort of initially, maybe, or I should say initially, but you wanted to sort of do instead of maybe being in a band, or is your path pretty much chosen, I think, for you because of that Mike Varney, you know, column in the Guitar Player magazine? Because most players who were, you know, usually mentioned by him, or, you know, obviously, you know, promoted by him, wound up becoming more of the instrumental type of guitarists.
Yeah, good question. Yeah, I think I was inspired to go into instrumentals by working with too many singers.
Okay.
That's not fair. Yeah, I guess initially I wasn't really leaning towards instrumental guitar music, but as the years went on and I started learning more and, you know, the Varney shrapnel era just exploded and all these phenomenal players like, you know, Paul Gilbert and Vinnie Moore and Greg Howe and all these guys started coming out, McAlpine. I just started really levitating more towards that. And I really enjoyed listening to that stuff more. So, at one point I just decided to try my hand at it, to see if, you know, if I could generate some interest you know, Varney's interest was definitely generated. So, so that's when I decided to go more that path.
Very cool. Nice. Okay. And Carl,
John was talking about, you know, he was joking about the vocalists and John, of course, with Harpo, Shmulik Avagal, who recently passed away, they did two songs that I had written on, were on my Headbanger album, Heat of the Night and Crossfire. So, but John, you know, was fantastic working with vocalists. I mean, he's just an amazing player that way. But you touched on something before, and I think maybe that's why John and I have this connection. If not that I think John overplays, but you know, I've made a career of overplaying. So maybe that's the connection, John, how we mesh.
It's like enough of that drum solo. We got a song to play.
You know, I always say with the Rods, we have a rule that is, if I play a fill, they should stop playing. And of course, if they think I'm going to play a fill, they should stop playing.
Well, so. Carl, I mean, you just brought up, you know, Headbanger, and I was just going to ask you, you know, I mean, as a guy like yourself, I mean, you've obviously been in the business so long, and I'm sure you could enlist the services of so many prominent guitarists out there to contribute to your music. So out of everyone you could have chosen, why was John your go-to guy for that first Kennedy record?
I have a lot of respect for John, and as I said, I'm a fan. And John just had elements in his playing and his style. And, you know, we did communicate well musically. So I knew that he would take the songs. He would be faithful to what I wrote. But my guitar playing is probably like maybe Trump's presidency. You know, it's had some rough spots. You know, not to get political, but I'm just saying, you know, Trump's had a few rough spots.
Too soon.
That's like my guitar playing. So I knew that he would be faithful to my melodies and the structure, but then he would just elevate the hell out of my songs. And I knew I could trust him with that. And of course I was very grateful for that. So it was really a no brainer.
Sure. Do you think either one of you can grab this one? Do you think that this becomes a more kind of a permanent collaboration going to the future? Will John be your first call for the next Kennedy record as an example?
Well, you know, over the course of this record, I really came to dislike him. And so going forward, I mean, if we're speaking, it'll be a surprise.
Yeah, no, I don't really take his calls.
Let's get the F you button. No, I don't even know that I would change anything because everything has been organic, if you will. And, you know, why fix it if it's not broken? I mean, it's been going on so well, but I would always work with John if he called me. And of course, I would go to him probably my first call on any projects I'm doing outside of the actual bands.
Right. Certainly. Well, and John, you know, one of the things that really struck me listening to your record was it more just the fact that you're from Pennsylvania, which is just not known for this kind of music. You know, I mean, certainly there's players everywhere. It's players in every state. But, you know, like I told you off air, I have a business in Pennsylvania, so I spend a lot of time there. And what I end up hearing in the Pittsburgh area is a lot more pop metal-y type of bands. You know, definitely not what I'll call more sophisticated music like what you're playing. You know, has it been difficult to find like-minded, not only fans, but musicians as well to play with in Pennsylvania, since it's not necessarily a hotbed for progressive rock and metal?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's really no playing around here now because of COVID. Sure. But I never really, since I spent my early career, you know, on the road a lot, I wasn't really in Pennsylvania. In fact, I mean, there's fan bases in other states on the East Coast that are a lot more familiar with me and my playing my music than in Pennsylvania. We certainly have a hometown crowd. But yeah, I don't really, there aren't a whole lot, like you said, there aren't a whole lot of musicians that are really into the more progressive metal type style. I would have to agree with that.
Sure, definitely. And Carl, I'll throw this one out to you. You know, with you doing, I mean, you obviously have the Kennedy band and you're working with John, and there's certainly the Rods, you know, and you know, I think you're what now, 30, 31 years old? So,
yes,
you know.
Yes, there's some kind of multiple there. Yes.
I mean, do you still get up and get the amperage to do it full time, or are you starting to wind down to where you're like enjoying production more than actual performance, or where are you adjusting to at this point in your career?
I'm all about playing now. You know, when I first got my set of drums at 13, I was just gung-ho. And that's how I am. I have my electronics set up downstairs. I have my recording kit here. I have a kit in Cortland for the Rods. I have a Kennedy kit. I have a Jeffrey James band, the 7-piece or 8-piece horn band here in Scranton I played with for 22 years when I'm not on the road. I'm playing drums more than ever, and I have a new album by the 450s, which will hopefully come out this in 2021, and working on a new Kennedy and working on a new Rods. Like, I'm three songs in on each album. So it's all about the drums for me. It always has been. And you know, it's not that I love producing, but at this point, I feel like drums are it for me because I definitely see the light at the end of the tunnel, you know, growing closer. So it's better for me. I'm just focused on my drums. And at some point, my daughter's boyfriend said, "When are you going to retire playing drums?" And my daughter, without missing a beat, we were all eating, she didn't even look up. She said, "Never." And that was a pretty good answer. You know, it's the rock till you drop. So for me, it's right. Full steam ahead on drums, and I'm playing at a high level and I'm comfortable with it. And so just going to continue on. And as my sound guy said to me, you know, "Could you bang and clang for me while I get some volume?" So I'm going to keep banging and clanging as long as I can.
I guess depending on the room size, he doesn't even need to get volume.
Awesome. Well, John, I mean, you know, in today's, you know, music world, I mean, you have so many, you know, there are so many great guitar players that have benefited, you know, from the technological outlets, you know, and platforms like Guitar Hero. We saw that about 15 years ago. These days, a lot of the guitar players are, you know, honing their skills via YouTube. So you would think we would be seeing like an explosion of these great new, you know, great new music from these artists and these guitar players. But yet, I think a lot of the younger generation of highly skilled guitar players, they don't really have much experience and skills when it comes to actually playing with and making music with other musicians. So there's not really necessarily lack of talent, but there's definitely a lack of will, I would say, of being able to make music together with others. As a guy who yourself, who's been, you know, you've been doing your own thing, yet also collaborating with other musicians over your career, what advice could you give a younger guitar virtuoso who lacks sort of the will to go out and start a band, but they obviously have all these skills and they want to make a career for themselves? What would you give? I mean, I know it's got to be, obviously, we were talking, obviously, before we started recording this, we were talking to you about, you know, how difficult really, you know, it is to sort of build a base now for a band, you know, let alone an instrumentalist. I mean, what kind of advice could you give a young guitar virtuoso on how to really go about it from what you experienced?
Good question. Are you sure you want me? Nobody knows who I am, so are you sure you want me to give the advice?
I do. I want you to give the advice.
I'm just kidding. I mean, yeah, if you're my advice would be if you're waiting around for the right band or the right musicians, you know, that picture, you know, that fit that picture in your mind, you're never really going to find that perfect band and you're never going to do anything or go anywhere. You just need to get together with like-minded players and try and write music, or if you're into playing covers, play covers or whatever it is. But there's nothing like, you know, feeding off of other players in the same room making that same music together. So, you know, playing along with click track or, you know, different rhythm tracks and stuff. That's one thing. I mean, you hone your chops, but like I said, there's nothing like the feeling of playing together with other players and making music together. So I would certainly encourage that.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's talk a bit about the video we're going to be premiering here in a little bit for the song Heaven's Fury. I mean, me and Chris both really love the song and that video. I mean, we were saying right before, you know, we came on here too. I mean, we were talking to you about the video. I really love the setting. It looks like it's inside like an abandoned building, I guess, somewhere, which I guess you have to do that these days during COVID. You can't, you know, it's such a tough, it's tough to make videos, obviously, right now, the way you want them to. So I guess talk to us a bit about the video and the making of it, since, like I said, it's really challenging these days during the pandemic to make one.
Yeah, sure. Shortly after I released the CD, a guy reached out to me over Facebook, David Matisko. Okay. He's a guy who, he was a big fan of the band back in the day. He basically told me, you know, if you need new promo shots, I'm a photographer and I'd love to shoot you. And I said, you know, we just started going back and forth, you know, I'd like to do something on location because I don't really want to do something in a studio where you're standing in front of a tarp posing. Right. I wanted it to be a cool, you know, place with a really neat background. Mm-hmm. And as it turns out, his son is kind of a somewhat of an inspiring rap artist. And he had done a video in this old boiler works. It's a huge abandoned building in Eastern PA. So I went online, found some video of people who actually shot video while they were touring through this place. And it's like, this looks great. And I said to him, you know, I'd like to take advantage of this instead of just shooting promo shots. Can you do video? And he says, you know, I can do video and I have a drone. And it's like, we're in, you know, this place nice. Is massive. So it's like, you know, let's do this. Let's get together. So we get there, shoot the video. We get there, shoot the photos, and then get onto the video. And we're just taking shots from different areas. It was really spur of the moment. We just got there. I kind of had a vision in my head how I wanted to do things. So we started with the camera work and then moved on to the drone work. So basically what I would do is cue up a part of the song on my phone so I could sync later, and just put the phone in my back pocket and start playing while he's shooting. Then when I got all the footage back, then I would try and piece together all of these pieces of footage back and re-time align everything, which was an interesting challenge, but it ended up turning out really, really good, I think. And it was, I've never really had that much fun doing photo shoots before, but this one was truly a pleasure. It was a good time. I think it showed in the final product. I think it was really a lot of fun, and what a great setting with all the graffiti and all this old iron work that was all rusty and it was a good time.
Yep, definitely. Awesome. Well, and it definitely shows. One last quick question, John, before we get to the video itself, and it really doesn't have anything to do with the video, but
sure.
Certainly, you know, everybody, especially any guitar player, is aware of Eddie Van Halen passing away. It's probably the biggest loss in guitar player history, or one of them. Yeah, you know, one of those very high end losses.
Yeah, and very painful.
And I certainly, you know, I certainly understand that he has influence on anybody that plays guitar. But I'm curious, as a player that's better than an average player, which you're certainly on the highest end of being a player, was his influence more of something to about playing, or was it more about challenging yourself to find new sounds and new styles to make them your own? Because that's what he, in my eyes, that's what he did better than anybody, was reinvented himself over and over again.
Yeah, personally for me, it was a combination. I remember, you know, being a youngster and maybe freshman in high school when I heard, you know, Van Halen, and I'm hearing this crazy stuff, and it's like, what is this guy even doing? You know, before anybody knew exactly how he was playing this stuff. So, I mean, over the years, Eddie Van Halen to me was inspiring, both as a player and an innovator. I mean, he turned the guitar world upside down as a player and a musician. So he certainly helped to drive me to be a better player. I certainly stole a lot of his technique, although I do tap, but I use it in a lot of different ways than he did.
Sure.
I would say his innovation was very inspiring, you know, to come up with new and different things myself, as well as just, you know, in awe of what he did, because, you know, nobody did. It's easy to do something after somebody else has. And
right.
So he really lit the guitar world on fire when he came out of the blocks.
He sure did. And Carl, I'll ask you the same question, but I'll replace the name Eddie Van Halen with Neil Peart, because obviously, you know, 2020, if it did anything, it sucked just for taking unbelievable players from us. And, you know,
it really did.
Neil Peart is, you know, as virtuoso, every bit as virtuoso as Eddie Van Halen with his instrument.
He totally changed it, because like they talk about, Neil would set, they had a set kit in the dressing room for him and he would warm up, but he had all those fills that are iconic. Everybody in the audience was air drumming them. He had to play them, execute them every time, because everybody knew them and they were waiting for them. But, you know, aside from Peart, there were two things about him. One was he was innovative. But the other thing was, at some point in his career, he stopped, studied, and changed his style. And I know for me, that made a huge difference. I took 6 months off, and I was working like 6 and 8 hours a day straight, and it totally helped me change my style. But for him, he studied, and he really worked. And he was at a point when Rush was huge. And so that was a major thing for someone to do. Why did he have to? He already had made his money. I really had a lot of respect for that. And I had a lot of respect for the fact that he was so dedicated, not to mention he brought lyrics. You know, he was he had a lot to say. And so, you know, he was the consummate musician, a drummer. And, you know, just a great loss. I mean, who knows what more he would have done with Rush. And so it was a big loss.
Yeah. Just one more quick one about Neil. What did you think as a drummer when he started adding electronics? Because I've heard some people were like, okay, that was great. It was a good challenge. I've heard a lot of other drummers that are like, bah, that's the one bad thing that Neil did. You know, they didn't like that he tried playing some electronic drums.
You know, it's hard for me to make a criticism about that, because I think that anytime, first of all, when you're reaching for something, it's not a home run every time. You're going to add whatever you're adding, whatever instrument you are, whether you're adding organic drums or electronic drums, and whatever you're trying to do, you know, you're trying to go further, expand. And so you have to respect that. Now, is it right for everybody? You know, and especially when there's for a lot of bands like Rush, those types of bands that are so much impact, or Dogma, like when Eddie Van Halen kind of stopped playing guitar and went to the keyboards, people were like, mm-hmm. Hey, pick up that guitar. What are you doing with the keyboards? And it's, you know, you can't hit a home run. And then on the other hand, you have people who don't want to hear change. They don't want to hear anything. And so I don't look at it as that. I look at it as this was what made him a great artist. So, you know, if I liked everything or didn't like everything, I still respected that attempt.
Yeah, and as far as electronic drums go, the amount of electronic drums they needed to fill in to help pull Carl over the finish line for the CD.
Namaste. By the way, John,
I'm kidding.
This has been interesting for me, because we've talked about playing this album live, like doing shows, and it's obviously with COVID, it's impossible. But at some point, it may not be. But we would need a band, and I was thinking if we took letters from Han and letters from Kennedy, we could call the band Hacken, and I think that would be a great name.
We could get a Don Dokken lookalike to sing.
Uh-huh.
You could be Hacken with Dokken, right? There you go. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, guys, why don't we stop teasing the people that are watching right now and let them get their first look at Heaven's Fury. It's brand new from John Han. It's from Undiscovered World. And right before we play it, John, I'll leave this to you. Where should people go to buy the record, find out more about what you're doing, et cetera, et cetera?
Good question. I guess a good place to start would just be johnhan.com. If you know, from there, you know, you can go to wherever you're looking for. I have links. But if you want the physical CD, I would say Amazon or Bandcamp. Bandcamp being a more artist-friendly site, as far as they don't, you know, take all the money and say, "Here's your quarter. Have a nice day." and digitally, again, Bandcamp and any other place you would find digital downloads, Apple Music, on YouTube, pretty much anywhere you find the digital downloads as well, you'd have no problem finding it.
Great. And where should they look for you, Carl?
They can go to therods.com, kennedyband.com, or they can just look me up on Facebook. I have a few pages there, including Kennedy.
There you go. Perfect. Well, let's give them what they're looking for. It's John Han. It is a Heaven's Fury. And guys, thanks so much for joining us on Aftershocks.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for having us. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Aftershocks. For more episodes, go to our website at www.aftershockspodcast.com. Visit us on our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages for more news and information on the podcast. And be sure to subscribe, listen to, and review all episodes on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all other podcast platforms. For your music listening pleasure, visit our website or go to www.shockwavesradio.com. For all comments and questions, please email us at info@aftershockspodcast.com.
All right, everybody, another great interview right here on Aftershocks TV. And before we go, just want to remind you one more time, make sure you get over and subscribe to the CMS Podcast Network, cmspn.com. You can watch, you can listen, you can subscribe to everything that we do, not only us, but the Classic Metal Show, Shockwave Skull Sessions, Talk to Me. It's all there, one site, get four great shows, never have to do anything again but be entertained. So check it out, cmspn.com, cmspn.com, cmspn.com. Until next time, folks.